produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. Atlanta police confirm marijuana, the only substance found after shooting 92-year-old woman in her home. After weeks of testing, Atlanta police confirmed that marijuana was the only illicit substance found after police shot and killed 92-year-old Catherine Johnson in her home during a no-knock raid. On November 21st, Atlanta Police Department Narcotics Squad pried burglar bars off the windows and conducted a plainclothes no-knock warrant at the home of Miss Johnson. During the operation, Miss Johnson used her firearm to defend herself against what she likely perceived to be criminal intruders. Johnson fired upon the officers as they entered her home. Three of the officers were injured. Police returned fire, killing the elderly Atlanta resident. Civil rights advocates immediately called out the incident as a violation of civil liberties and racial injustice. Police said they had credible information that a man staying in the house was selling a prohibited substance. An affidavit used to obtain the search warrant stated that a local informant purchased crack cocaine in the home, but the informant later vehemently denied ever having been to Johnson's house, even interviewing on a local television station. Atlanta Police Chief Richard J. Pennington announced Friday that federal prosecutors are now conducting an investigation of the shooting. The FBI, the Justice Department, the Fulton County District Attorney's Office, and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation are all taking part in the probe. The eight members of the narcotics squad involved with the shooting have been placed on paid administrative leave. The spokesman for the Johnson family, the Reverend Markel Hutchins, visited Washington to speak with agencies and lawmakers about the shooting. Hutchins said he urged Justice Department officials to press for strong federal guidance to local police departments against the use of no-knock warrants. Until Friday, Atlanta police had not disclosed what illicit substance or how much of it was found in the home during the raid, citing the need for testing to verify the material. The police have now confirmed the substance confiscated at the home as marijuana, and the amount of only 1.93 grams. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We're asking for your donations here today on the Audio Stash. Just go on up to normalaudiostash.com, click the PayPal donate link, and give us a buck, give us $5. If you're a listener to this program, we could certainly use your support so that we can go into 2007 with some great new content, maybe even a little bit of better equipment out there. We've had such success here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash that we've had to upgrade our servers to deal with the bandwidth. So help us out, help us reach more people. Make a donation today up at normalaudiostash.com. Stay tuned today. We have an important interview with William Billy Murphy Jr., a trial lawyer in Baltimore, and an important discussion about race and marijuana prohibition. Also in the program today, we have some great music later on today from George Harab up there from podshow.com, and none other than one of my favorite American musicians, Ani DeFranco, all here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Last week on the Audio Stash, I presented an editorial here highlighting the racist enforcement of our current prohibition laws. We're going to continue to cover this aspect of prohibition with our guest on the program today, William Billy Murphy Jr. Murphy is a former Maryland judge and one of our nation's top trial lawyers, who has a unique perspective on America's drug prohibition and its evisceration of our urban communities. We've aired Billy's speech at the 2006 Normal Conference on the Normal Events podcast and portions of that speech right here on the Audio Stash. It's a great privilege to welcome Billy Murphy here to the Audio Stash today. Billy, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Doing spectacular here today, Billy. Thanks again for taking time to join us. Just 2 weeks ago, the Bureau of Justice Statistics at the Department of Justice released data showing America has a record prison population, with the numbers of those in prison on probation or on parole disproportionately higher for young black men. Billy, are these numbers a surprise?
No, this is a result of a trend that began in 1968 when Richard Nixon decided to wage a war on drugs against black people. And maintaining essentially a status quo in the white community, treating drug abuse and the drug issue as a medical problem. That had been the way that we were approaching drug addiction in America as a whole for many, many years. And the case law that was being developed in the pre-war on drugs era in the 60s was excellent case law where, for example, drug addiction was not regarded as a crime. It was regarded as a medical condition. And that was, frankly, the direction of criminal law until the civil rights movement and its aftermath, where black people took front and center stage in the struggle for equality in America, and the South got incredibly pissed off and decided no more. And Nixon, of course, wanted to switch the South to the Republican Party because they were thoroughly disgusted with the Democrats who had participated in the civil rights movement. And so he was able to say explicitly and implicitly that we will solve your black problem for you if you switch sides. And so the Republicans, in essence, in many ways, became the new racists. They took the Dixiecrat banner, reworked it, polished it up so that the targeted audience for racist response to black people understood the language they were using, responded appropriately, and so there was a counter-revolution. Remember, the Warren Court had revamped criminal law, and so Nixon set out to dismantle those progressive steps. There was the women's movement, which really discombobulated a lot of men in traditional parts of the country. There was also the anti-war movement. And there was also a series of assassinations and social upheaval in America that conspired all to destabilize white men in the South, in the Midwest, in the states that were formerly slave states. And so we started getting a lot of legislation in the criminal law front that was regressive. First, we lost in federal court the right to get bail under traditional circumstances because the presumption of innocence no longer meant anything at a bail review. And then we got the sentencing guidelines. The sentencing guidelines eliminated all the traditional sentencing factors, ramped the sentencing structure sky high, and was imitated in many of the states in the country. And that caused things like the Rockefeller Law in New York, and a real regressive legislation in states like Delaware, which had been formerly fairly progressive. And so now the drug laws not only were targeted at blacks, but the sentences went through the roof.
And, with this whole mandatory minimums thing as
well. Oh,
yeah,
that was the next wave, mandatory minimums. And then you had crack, which gave the regressive forces in the country another opportunity to ratchet the sentences up yet again. Finally, we've got white folks becoming, as we put in the black community, niggerized in this whole security scandal and Wall Street stuff where you're seeing businessmen at age 50 getting essentially life sentences, 25 years no parole, 30 years no parole. The country's gone mad about sentencing, and now we are probably, and there's no doubt about this, I don't even know why I say probably, we're the worst sentencers We give the longest sentences to more people than any other so-called civilized country in the history of the world, more than the Soviet Union during the height of the Gulag, more than present-day China, more than South Africa at the height of apartheid, more than any other European nation. I mean, by far, we criminalize everything and everybody, especially if they're black drug users or drug dealers.
Even the Department of Justice in this statistical release states that the record growth in federal prisons is attributable to prohibition violations, and the ratio for black men ages 25 to 35 is truly heartbreaking, with 1 in 9 in prison on probation or on parole. So, Billy, how do we get the media and lawmakers to turn a spotlight onto this, what is the last fully institutionalized, taxpayer-funded form of racism in America?
I think they're a combination of strategies. First of all, I think we've got to get the debate going about prohibition. There is no debate in this country. One of the remarkable things about this era of prohibition is that despite the fact that it has caused murder rates at about the same level as alcohol prohibition, criminal gangs at about the same level as alcohol prohibition, and all of the same ancillary evils that we saw during alcohol prohibition, white America is not saying a word about it. White politicians and black politicians too afraid to say anything about it because as late as about 5 years ago, if you said we've got to make drugs legal, you would become a political pariah. And so politicians are staying away from it. And I think recently there's been a change because these incarceration rates are so high, and the cost is so big that people are now, especially conservatives of all people, are looking for a way out. Now you have ex-law enforcement people banding together in an organization called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And, you know, you've got people like Norm Stamper, who's the former police chief of Seattle. You've got Jack Cole, who was head of interdiction for the New Jersey State Police. And a variety of other top-tier law enforcement people saying, this prohibition stuff we're doing is wrong, it's counterproductive, it's destructive of black families, it's inherently and explicitly racist. You know, Jack Cole, for example, confesses about the entire New Jersey profiling debacle, where we targeted black people who were shipping less drugs because they're smaller percentage of the population than their white counterparts over the highways of the United States. Yet they were targeted and whites were left alone. Absolutely racist, appalling, and intentionally targeting black people, driving while black, walking while black, being in your house while black. It's all out of control. Now, the problem is because we don't enforce the drug laws in the white community the way we enforce the drug laws in the black community. White folks don't feel the pain. They don't feel the pain of mandatory minimums. Some do. Most could care less. They don't feel the pain of excessive sentences. They don't feel the pain of criminalization and the loss of the right to vote and all the social privileges that get lost when you get a felony conviction, all the social disruption, the loss of the men who provide for the family, the impoverishment of these families. They're not feeling that. And so they lack empathy because their ox is not getting gored. And so that's why you don't see a hue and cry about this. Frankly, the strategy that we're starting to pursue in the black community is we're calling out mayors who only enforce drug laws in the black sector. We're calling out prosecutors who are only enforcing the laws in the black community. We're calling out police chiefs who only enforce the drug laws in the black community. And we're starting to mobilize black sentiment, which heretofore has been apathetic. It's not on the table of black people. It's kind of like the invisible 800-pound gorilla that sits in your living room every night. We see it, but we don't see it. We don't act on it. We don't talk about it. It's kind of like we're demoralized. But yet we're seeing the beginning of movement, because when white folks come to the black community and they confess, which is what LEAP people do, That has a powerful impact on the debate and the willingness of blacks to start talking about the subject. And until black people mobilize against it, you can't blame white folks for not giving two shits about it, to coin a phrase.
Billy, you served as a judge, and it must weigh heavy on the minds of our country's judges to see America's prison population out of control as it is today. But there's little judges can do about this, is that right?
Well, there are two things you can say about judges. Number one, they have limited discretion, and that was the intent of Congress and the people who wanted the sentencing guidelines and mandatory minimums. But they're very quiet about how unfair it is. Every once in a while, you will find a judge or two or three here and there who speak out strongly against it. But in the main, they pick up their lunch pail, they go to work, and they implement these horrific policies without batting an eye. And the proof of the pudding was when we got excited, all of us, when the Supreme Court declared the sentencing guidelines to be unconstitutional. We still have them. They're still being followed. They're the rule. Because judges are basically cowards. You know, giving a lifetime appointment to a federal judge would seem to give them a measure of freedom. But yet, these men are more concerned about how they get along with Congress or how the public perceives them than in giving justice. It's a very sad situation. Very sad.
So there really is a difference here. We've heard the neocons out there, including our president, on many, many occasions cry out the phrase activist judges. But it really doesn't sound like judges can do anything in this situation.
Well, it's so bad that the neocons and the fundamentalist Christian community have actually bought into the notion that judges are too lenient. And they're actually forming watchdog groups to report judges who don't toe the extremist line of giving the highest sentences and to make them even higher. And so you hear all of this nonsense talk where we have crime policy being based on emotion rather than reason, fear rather than reason, demagoguery rather than reason. And the Congress is so frightened. They, you know, they are in a perpetual political campaign because they got to run every 2 years. They're so frightened to be out of step with their community that they let their community force them into more and more regressive laws. It's insane. But it's been getting worse every year, kind of like George Bush.
And he was making Tony Blair look mighty uncomfortable last week as they stood on stage together. Billy, it also begs the question, has this racist enforcement and the way we enforce drug prohibition softened up the American public to the civil liberties and civil rights violations we observe now as commonplace in this so-called war on terror?
Oh, absolutely, because once you get used to a police state in the black community, then it visits your community. And it's a very short step from the black community to the white community. It's just across the tracks and or the next neighborhood over. And so if you watch human beings get mistreated, forget what their color is, and you don't do anything about it, that's a license for you to be mistreated. And you know the old saying, first they came to get the gypsies, but I wasn't a gypsy, so I didn't care. Then they came and got the Jews, but I wasn't a Jew, and so I didn't care. And then they came to get the trade unionists, but I wasn't a trade unionist, so I didn't care. And then when they came for me, nobody was left to care.
And that's where we seem to be today in America. This form of prohibition enforcement has wide-ranging impacts on communities. As we saw in the case of Katherine Johnson, the 92-year-old woman gunned down as police served a no-knock prohibition warrant in Atlanta.
Well, unfortunately, our inner cities are police states. Things happen that are appalling. In Baltimore, like in Atlanta, you have this astounding mismatch between what happens in the black community and the white community. And just last year, the grand jury report of May 2006 said that in Baltimore City alone, 21,000 black people were arrested who were never charged with a crime. And then 25% of all cases brought by the state's attorney's office, except cases that are initiated by summons, you know, ticket kind of traffic ticket cases are dismissed, and 65% of the summons cases are dismissed. And so that adds another 10,000-15,000 people a year. And if you add these numbers up for the past 7 years of the last administration, which was the one who really stepped up this zero-tolerance, so-called zero-tolerance policy, which really becomes a corner-clearing, mass arrest kind of policy as a crime control device. And then you've got something that resembles a country vastly different than the America that so many people fought to defend and died to defend. So many people fought to get us a constitution that's now being flouted. I mean, it's as though these things are getting washed away in a sea of apathy and ignorance. It's terrible to watch. This is such a great country. But we're losing our opportunity for true greatness because we can always do better, but instead, now we're doing worse.
And yet there are people like you, Billy, and Norm Stamper and Jack Cole working to change this problem and end Prohibition and giving inspiration to us all. Billy, I want to thank you so very much for taking time to join us here today.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed being on your show. And let Normal's mission get accomplished. It's a great organization.
William Billy Murphy Jr. is a former judge and one of America's top trial lawyers based out of Baltimore, Maryland. We have links to his law firm at normalaudiostash.com. Now it's time for some music here on the program. First, one of my absolute favorite artists here in America, Ani DeFranco, with this tune coming up. This is from the Silver Wolf Homeless Project CD, and it's posted at the IODA, the Independent Online Distribution Alliance.
Sits in his 37th floor suite and swivels to gaze down at the city he made me in. He allows me to stand and solicit graffiti until he needs the land I stand on. And I in my darkened threshold and pawing through my pockets the receipts, the bus schedules, urgent napkin poems and matchbook phone numbers, all of which laundering has rendered pulpy and strange loose change in a key. Ask me. Go ahead. Ask me if I care. I got the answer here. I wrote it down somewhere. I just gotta find it. And somebody in their spray paint got too close. Somebody came on too heavy. Now look at me, met ugly by the drooling letters. I was better off alone. Ain't that the way it is? They don't know the first thing, but you don't know that till they take the first swing. My fingers are red and swollen from the cold. I'm getting bold in my old age. So go ahead. Try the door, it doesn't matter anymore. No, the weak hearted or strong will are we being kept alive until we're killed. He's up there. The ice is clinking in his glass. He sends us little pieces of paper. I don't ask, I just empty my pockets and wait. It's not fate, it's just circumstance. I don't fool myself with romance. I just live phone number, dusting them against my thighs and the mark in my pockets, which whisper history incessantly, asking me, where were you? I lower my eyes, wishing I could cry more and care less. Yes, it's true. I was trying to love someone again. I was caught carrying, bearing weight, but I love this city. This state, this country is too large, and who's ever in charge of there better take the elevator down and put more than change in our cup, or else we are coming up.
That was Ani DeFranco with Coming Up from the Silver Wolf Homeless Project CD from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. We got one more song for you here today. It's from Podshow.com. Here's George Harab with Think for Yourself.
As sure as the star-bellied sneeches butter the underside of their toast. All things being equal, the simplest answer's worth most. Don't rely on Vishnu, Buddha, Ron Popeil, or the Holy Ghost. Just just consider these words, and that ship of life you're sailing on might not smash into the coast. All the smiles and all the teeth and all the nods. And I've had my fill of promises, from magic rays to painless perfect bods. Watching every channel that flashes before me, I can't believe the level of spirituality. Oh, I've had enough of the geeks who have claimed to have found the way. I wish that guy watching would just take a sec and consider what I have got to say. Do yourself a favor. Think for yourself, little man. Tell you that they have the plan, 'cause everyone's lost chin deep in the sand. And what they're trying to sell to you, you shouldn't be buying. Think for yourself, little girl. Don't let them tell you how to run your world, 'cause everyone's the same. And if they tell you they ain't, well, they're just lying. Yeah, they're just lying. Reading all the pages in the standard magazines, I wonder if they realize what all that small print means. Whoa, you need a microscope to read about the no-fault guarantee. Yeah, to see that these results not typical, and this offer is void in any state that's spelled with an E, like Idaho. Watching all the people place bet after amazing bet, I wonder if they realize their misplaced raison d'etre. Oh, but they don't want to hear about the odds and statistic A and B, 'cause they know a guy who's got a friend who's got a brother who read a book by this other guy who says that, hey, this stuff always works for me. That's why I say, think for yourself, little folks. Yo, check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Is this thing on? Hey, these are the jokes. Beware of the dudes who don't like jabs and pokes. 'Cause when you can't laugh at yourself, you just end up crying. Think for yourself, little friend. Is it you that they like? Or is it the money you spend? Beware of the jerks who'd rather break than bend. And to question anything to them is just like dying. Yeah, it's like dying.
That was George Harab with Think for Yourself here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. That track was found up at podshow.com. We have links to all the artists we play on the program at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.